out there in Radio Land all over the world. Oh my God, what a bunch of listeners we have out there. I cannot believe the success of this show thanks to you listeners. Wow. We've got listeners in Paraguay, in England, in the Middle East, all over the Middle East. I can't believe. Maybe we'll bring you some peace over there so you guys don't have to have all this fighting amongst yourselves. We had a great, today we had a great NSA updating on the front page of BBS Radio. There's some grammatical errors because I had a three-hour briefing from Washington on that, but I think it's going to be some cool stuff. Really brings you up to date. Secondly, the camera is on. We got a new high-speed camera here, and this thing is really cool. It's almost instantaneous now, and in a few weeks we're going to be having regular live TV shows on BBS Radio. Tonight's guest, March 10th, 2007, is David Tickle, a friend of mine of 22 years. I can't believe it. He was just a little kid when I met him, and now he's an old man. Anyway, of course, I'm grandfather. So anyhow, I want to bring on right now my record producer, film producer, best music man in the world, David Tickle. David, are you there?
I'm right here. Thank you, Fred.
Yeah, how'd you like that intro? Did I do okay on you?
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. By the way, everybody knows David's from Guildford, England. That's, he just come over here when I met him, like back when it was 84 or something, right?
Yeah, that's right. And yeah. That was a very curious, I mean, the way that I met Fred is very curious, and it's all connected with all of your technology. And, I mean, do you want me to tell you?
Tell everybody. They want to know who you are, what you are. We've had your information, your website up. We've got a lot of people have seen, you know, the stuff on the, a lot of people are waiting for this program, believe me, because posted it 2 months ago that it was coming. Yeah, so they want to hear every, you know, this. You are the man, you know. I mean, you're the music man of the world. I mean, you really are.
I have to say, you know, the first of all, I really love to make music, and music to me is all vibration, and that's what we are as human beings, are instruments that receive vibration. So making music to me is an experience that you can't see what it is you're doing, but you can you hear it and you feel it.
Yeah,
so,
and you are, my friend, are the most amazing producer, mixer, recording engineer in the world. I've been around a few.
I've got a lot of colleagues who would challenge.
I know. But I know your track record. How many platinums and gold records do you have now? Could you count them all?
No, because I've given a lot to my family to put in their home.
Yeah, we could go out skeet shooting for a day, and every time we could throw up another platinum record that everybody, we'd still never run out, would we?
Well, we at some point we would, but we just have to go to the old singles.
Yeah. I was there one day when you got one for doing Joe Cocker, Elton John, and somebody else. I remember that was
right.
A long time ago, you know. So
yeah.
Yeah, you've got a few.
Well, you've been around a lot of this success. And
yeah.
Where it all started for me with Pyradyne was in 84, thereabouts. I was in Los Angeles, and I had a friend there, Peter Aykroyd, who...
Yeah, Dan Aykroyd's brother.
Yes, Dan's brother, a great friend, great guy. And he had read somewhere or heard somewhere, he couldn't remember where it was because he had no literature on it. He heard of this guy called Dr. Bell, who had invented this, some kind of telephone to speak with aliens. And that's as much information as he had. Plus, he said, I think it's about $14,000.
Yeah.
And it was like, I can't believe that. Really, there's a guy that has something that can actually communicate with extraterrestrials? Because I guess in my past, and my growing up, I've seen a lot of stuff in England. Growing up in England with crop circles and lights outside the back window, there's many, many mysterious
things. Yeah, let me just interrupt really quick. It was back about 85 when we were editing your trip over to
Stonehenge.
Stonehenge, and you were the first person to catch one of those orbs. Now everybody knows about orbs out there, ladies and gentlemen. David Tickle was the first person, and we sent it to Colin Andrews, who's very famous for crop circles. Of actual crop circle being made at his feet. He was almost standing in it. David Tickle was the first person to do that and capture that. And the standard that he went with became the worldwide standard for photographing all of these orbs and haunted houses and everything. David was the guy that did it. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, it was...
I've got a copy of it here, and I'm sure you do, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was definitely
that was
an amazing experience.
Yeah.
But what happened was, after I heard about this this thing of yours, this phone, I tried to find out where you were, who you were, and it was very difficult for me to... I had no idea. And to cut a long story short, we went to a conference, and at this conference I met someone who had this crystal in her hand at this conference. I said, "What are you doing with that?" I'd never seen anyone with a crystal before. I didn't know what it did. And she said, "Oh, I'm channeling." And I said, "What is channeling?" And she said, "Well, it's when you speak to your spirit guides and you're getting kind of confirmation on if something's good or not so good." Anyway, I got very curious with what all that was about, so she gave me a card, and I called her a couple of days later and went to Westlake to see this lady in Westlake Village, and she said, "Come in," and we went inside this room. She had this room with all these crystals and this pyramid in the middle on a carpet, big pyramid, like 10 foot by 10 foot, and she said, "Sit inside this, and we're going to meditate, and I will channel." So she starts doing this for about 30 minutes, and all this stuff starts coming through, which is quite fascinating. And she's recording it, and she says, "I have to take a break for a minute." I said, "What is this thing?" It's like, she says, "Well, this amplifies all the energy that's coming through, so I'm receiving all the information from spirits beyond. And some of them are space people that are coming through and talking with you." And I went, "Who made this thing?" And she said, "Dr. Bell." I almost jumped out of my skin. It was like, there I was, been looking for this thing for you know, about 6 months, and I find myself in one. And so that's where I got the pamphlet on the thing, and your book. Read your book in a couple of days, and so
That was Death of Ignorance, right, back in those
Death
days.
Death of Ignorance,
yeah. Yeah, so it really was.
I read that book, and your number was in it, or a number was there, which I called on a Sunday, I think it was. And for some reason, you picked up the phone, and we had a chat, and I told you who I was, and at first, you didn't know whether to believe me or not.
Exactly, because of Hollywood, you know.
Yeah. But basically, you asked me whether I wanted to come see a space simulator for a UFO, and it was like, "Well, that sounds intriguing. I got to see that." So that's when I first came down and met Dr. Bell in Laguna. And that was a life-changing moment.
Yeah, both of us. Because you were high energy. Well, I tell you, you were the little kid from England and had been working with the Beatles and everybody, and you had a hell of a lot of credentials, and I knew you were for real, and I didn't know what the hell to do with you. Because I could just see that you were some kind of a mystic anyway in your own light. You just needed to know what you were about, you know. And over the years, I've seen you do the most amazing magic anyway. I was right, you know.
Well, what it seemed to do was whatever's going on inside, your equipment has helped focus and amplify all of those desires and the clarity that comes.
Yeah, in those days we called it Pleiadian technology. Now we've taken it to a new level, which is called hologram. It's amazing now, yeah.
It is holographic. So once we'd met, I mean, the next amazing phenomenon for me was I got a system and I had it up in my home on...
The quad system, right? The four radiators, or was that the single radiator?
Quad. It was the quad.
Okay.
And it was up off of Laurel Canyon, up in the...
Yeah, up on Nash Drive. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Right. And anyway, I had this thing really tuned in. And a couple of... The two amazing things happened up there. The first one was I was religious about lifting the Omnion and lowering it for the phase of the full moon and the new moon.
Right.
And this one night, I was working in Hollywood Boulevard in a studio, and it got to about 11:30. I said, "Look, gotta go, get home for midnight to lift this thing."
Yeah, to lift it. Now, what he's explaining, ladies and gentlemen, is that he has a master crystal and he has to protect it from the full moon energies.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I, what happened was I jumped in the car. I had a friend staying with me, and she came up to the house with me and got back to the house. I said, "Oh my goodness, this is perfect. We're like 30 seconds to go. I haven't, you know, because I've been keeping this perfect for the last, you know, 6 months, trying to get it more and more timed in." Anyway, I can't remember whether I lowered it or pulled it up at the time. But it was one of the phases. Anyway, I did the, it was the pulling up of it. So that would have, is that the full moon on that? When
you pull it up during the new moon, you drop it during the full moon.
That's what it is. It was
what it is, ladies and gentlemen, it's a Pleiadian device that protects your master crystal, which is like a big storage battery for all your thoughts and ambitions and things you want to happen at that time, scalar wave system that had been developed by the Pleiadians and brought to us. Yeah,
that's
go ahead.
Right. So by lifting this thing up, everything that had been kind of stored in the last month, I guess, and the timing of it, pulling it up, all of a sudden this kind of like energy was caused in the middle of the pyramid, this kind of green fog, which I would later, I basically call it plasma now. But the whole pyramid filled with it. And I was at right angles to my friend, as far as my friend was on another angle of the pyramid.
Yeah.
So she was about 6-7 feet away. And we both saw this thing, and that almost the whole thing disappeared. And then another friend of ours arrived from the car up at the door. And when they got there, they're going, "What the is that?"
Yeah.
And then it just kind of receded back into the center crystal, the one hanging from the middle of the crystal of the pyramid that's on the inside of the pyramid.
Yeah. Can I just interrupt you here for a second, David?
Please, yeah.
We have a guy that comes on who's a high-level psychic. His name is Steve Barish, and he's probably the 21st century psychic of the world. He does a lot of amazing healing. He's on now. He's of this time now. He's about my age. An old drag racer that just became world famous, Ken Oda, who you've met, Prince of Japan, offered to take him over to meet the Masters. But we're talking back in 1984 here, a long time before I had ever seen any of this stuff, and you were one of the first people. I did not have the sensitivity that you have. I'm an old rocket scientist still at this point. I've still got government vibes all over me. And you were having this most amazing experiences, which just continued on, and it was so wonderful to hear these stories that you were having and your friends were having, because you were in the creative vein. That's the way you've made your living all your life. And I'm more like the old road grader out there. So I had to, you know, clear the mud off of me and stand up and dust myself off and get ready. So you were like, for me at that point, you were like an inspiration to realize what the heck I was making that you were using that I didn't even understand. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had that conversation back 20 years ago. Yeah, go ahead.
The next incident as such, I was, what I love to, in my home environment, put on a CD or a few of them and leave them on for hours, if not days.
Yeah, I do that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And at that particular time, I was very much into John Evangelist.
Yeah, tell them that story. Yeah, that's when we made our first wish.
Yeah, so
John Anderson from Yes.
So what?
Go ahead.
Was basically, you know, I used to play this music all the time. With the speakers that were right close to the pyramid and the crystal grid that was set inside it, and that was my environment for months. Anyway, after about I don't know 6 or 7 months of this going on and having the pyramid, I had the fortunateness to be called by Paramount Pictures to do a song on Legend.
Yeah, I remember that.
So it was the title track, the end track, that they wanted me to produce this song, and it was with John Anderson. From Yes. And it was like, this was a dream come true, because I love John. I've never met him
before.
Yeah,
me too.
So here I go. First of all, I meet him, and I produce this record. And at that time, I also had your titanium, the headgear.
Yeah, the Tower Dome. Got the, yeah, and David, we got the Chrysalis Dome coming out with diamond dust on it. I haven't told you about that.
No. Makes my head tingle too much.
Well, where do you see the new one? It's like you close your eyes and you see right through your closed eyelids. But that's another story. Go ahead. Tell the story.
Yeah, anyway, so that was extraordinary that we got to meet there.
Yeah.
And then...
And don't forget that after you finished that, I wanted to meet John Anderson. You brought him down to the house. He stayed overnight. We went for a walk out where I used to meet with Semyasi. He starts singing in the neighborhood at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm telling John Anderson to shut up till we get down to the hillside where he can scream out over the hills. Remember that?
Yep, I do.
And then, and I'm telling this famous singer who I idolize because of him and his work as Vangelis and the stories, and I'm telling him to shut up till we get down there to the hill where he can scream over the canyon. And he just sang, when he got into where he could do his thing, he sang this most brilliant song out across the canyon, because there was, in those days, Laguna wasn't very populated, with no music, no anything, like your buddy Sting that works with, doesn't need music, and just sounds brilliant with nothing, just the voice. And I remember that, and that was a milestone in my life, David, and thank you for that, bringing that thought up, you know.
Well, it all came from, I'm sure, this vibration device.
Yeah, you're right. You're totally right. You were teaching me so much at that time. You were such a great teacher.
You put the vibration in, and it attracts it if you've got if you set it up and you're positive about it and keep it clean.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. I just want to tell the world, when David tells me these things and says these things, millions of records go out. You know, he makes millions and millions of records, and the whole world sees it. It's not like talking about it. You did it. Yeah, now go ahead. Sorry.
It's okay.
You did it. I mean, did you not? Am I lying or not?
No,
lying?
No. It's
you're not.
The truth. And
yeah, it is.
So
very true.
Anyway,
you're very
I end up with this job. I have to go to Paris to make a record.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering what to do with my house at the time. And
that was Nash. Still Nash Drive, right?
Yeah. So John, I have John Anderson over for dinner one night, and he says, "Hey, David, Vangelis is coming into town. Do you mind if he comes up here?" And he says, "I know you're going out of town." I said, I need a place to stay for the next 2 months. He said, "Would you be interested in renting your house?"
Yeah.
The next thing is I rent my house to John Anderson, and then Vangelis comes over from Greece, and they're there in the house writing. That is the most bizarre, unbelievable, like, how did
that... Got the pyramid over your bed.
So,
that beautiful hot tub that you had, and this beautiful view of Los Angeles from the west side of town. It was so great. I love that house. The old Nash Street house was wonderful.
Well, that was it's the pyramid and the grid and the crystal. If you do it right, it's just, it really, really works. And you have to be careful about what you put out there. So
exactly.
You know, so I know the technology really works, and it's worked for me in many.
Well, let's go up to Calabasas with you too now. Yeah. I mean, you too and Bono. Tell them that story.
If
I'm jumping ahead of your program, tell me but there's a couple of high points.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was fortunate enough to make the Rattle and Hum album with you too.
30 million sold.
It's just it's a great record to be involved with. And on that record, the way that came about, and again, I put it down to the clarity and the knowing that you get with having this crystal grid and the pyramid, was I've just been through. I've just been through a year on a record with Tony Childs. And it's been a good record to make. We've been to Africa and recorded African Zulus. I mean, it had a lot of great soul.
You did a lot of beautiful ethnic stuff. We haven't even gotten to that
yet. Yeah. And it was a successful record, but I'd spent a year on it, and I was just beaten up from being on one record for it. I've never been on one project that lasted a year.
Yeah, really, movies don't take that long anymore.
So at the end of that, I kept thinking, what is it I want to do? What is it I want to do? And the only thing that I kept getting in my mind's eye was, you've got to work with U2. You've got to work with U2. That's the only thing I could hear in my head. And I of course, I love U2.
Yeah.
So I had this meeting with my management at the time in Venice in California. And I went down, drove down from Malibu to see them. And I went into this meeting, and it was about 10:30 in the morning, thereabouts. And so I have this meeting with these two guys, and they say, "So, David, you know, you've been on a long record. So, what is it you you're looking for now? What do you feel like you think we should go out and scout out for you?" And I said, "Well, there's only one thing that comes up for me, and that's you too." Anyway,
kidding. Hottest band in the world at the time.
David, yes, you know, everyone wants to work with you too. And I said, "No, you don't get it. That's the only band I want to work with, and the only band I'm going to work with.
Yeah.
Is you too. And I don't know how. I just know that's what I'm supposed to do."
Is that when our buddy at Warner Brothers was managing you then?
At Paramount, Burt Berman.
No, oh, okay, Burt Berman, that's what I thought. Yeah, well, Burt, I remember him, yeah.
Yeah, no, Burt was already, he was at Sony at the
time. Oh, he was at Paramount before Warner Brothers.
He was Universal, then he went to Columbia, and then he went to, he's at Paramount still now.
Okay, oh, that's where he's at, okay. Anyway, go ahead. I'm throwing this in for the audience for a little flavor, because they all know me
anyway,
out there.
Oh, that's good. So the these managers were basically saying, you know, everyone else wants to do that, and maybe you're not even good enough to do that.
And yeah, like, that's pretty heavy.
I just walked out of the office. I couldn't believe that this was my management.
Yeah.
You know, they had the nice socks on and nice shoes and all that stuff. And it was like, where are they coming from here?
Yeah.
I'm an artist and I want to be heard and supported.
Yeah.
So I drove home and I was pretty mad with their response to me. And just before I walked out, one of the managers, he says, "Anyway, David, Jimmy Iovine's producing the record. It's already a done deal. They're already making the record."
Yeah.
And I went, "Jimmy Iovine? How did that happen? I've not heard that." Anyway, I walked out the office. I drove home. When I got home, I thought, I know where Jimmy Iovine is. He's over on the A&M lot. I'm going to call him, even though we've never met before.
Yeah.
And find out what's going on. So I call him up, and I get his assistant. He says, "Jimmy's not available right now." And he says, "Can you leave a message?" And I said, "Okay, yeah, tell Jimmy he has a band that should be mine." And he says, "Which band is that?" I said, "Just have him call me and I'll tell him." Because I'd never met him before, so I thought I had to make it more mysterious to get him to call.
Yeah, no, that was very smart. So you're a metaphysical guy from England, you know. You hang out in Stonehenge, come on, baby, you're caught. You're hot.
So anyway, 25 minutes later, Jimmy Iovine calls me back. And his
25 minutes, yeah, that's a seven. That was quick.
He says, "Hey, it's Jimmy Iovine here. So, David, what's all this about? There's some band that should be yours." And I said, he said, "What is it?" And I said, "Jimmy, if you'll meet me, I'll tell you who it is. But I won't do it unless you'll meet me."
Oh, boy, you're really mysterious now. I'm getting inner workings of the tickle mind here.
So he said, "Meet you." I says, "Okay, well, fine." He says, and by now it's about 12:30 now. He says, "Well, can you be here at 2:30? And I said, "I'll be there at 2:30, Jimmy."
So you went to him?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. So I got this meeting with Jimmy. This is the same day as being blown off from my managers. So I drive out to Hollywood.
Hollywood.
To meet Jimmy.
Yeah.
And walk into the room and meet Jimmy. And Jimmy sits down and he says, "So, Tickle, what's the big mystery?" He says, "What band is this?" And I said, "Jimmy, it's U2." He said, "U2?" I said, "Yeah, U2." He says, "Do you like U2?" I said, "I love U2. I just think they're the greatest band. And I just know I have to make this record." He says, "Well, let's make it together."
Yeah, there you go.
And my jaw kind of dropped. And I thought, what am I hearing here? He says, "Look, I've got lots of different people lined up to come in and help make the record, and we don't know who we're going to be making the record with yet." Because Jimmy, although he's a producer, he's like an executive producer. He manages people really well, and he gets people in to do certain jobs. So, yeah, got one guy in to mix specifically the soundtrack stuff for the movie. for the theatrical release, and I did all the studio recording with the band.
Right.
So I basically what happened was he says, look, I'll give you a call when we know what we're doing and you're on the list. And I thought, you know what, whether he calls me or not, I made it, because that was vindication for not being put down by these other guys. And when I go home and I sit in the pyramid and I get that clarity and I'm being told what's right and I believed it, I went out and it happened.
Yeah.
So it's very,
David,
very
you manifest this stuff. I've seen you manifest huge estates, Hawaiian land. I have seen you. You have been the greatest manifester without the holographic stuff. Everything that I have ever seen you go after, you got in spades. And you started out with nothing. So anyhow, go ahead. I just want everybody to know, David Tickle started with nothing. He's huge in the world.
Just a good brain and good parents and a good brain. And,
your dad was great. I knew his parents. I met his dad. His dad was great. All from Guilford. His dad liked trains. We all love steam engines. His dad loves them. I love them. I still have some.
He's learning to drive a steam engine right now. He's like, he turned 17.
That's fine. I'll send him over to Canada to my friend up there that runs that big Canadian thing out of Victoria, Broadfoot, and I'll put him on the biggest, most beautiful steam engine in the world. I can do that in two phone calls. I'm serious.
Wow. Well,
big, beautiful stainless steel burgundy, train.
I love him.
I can set that up in a heartbeat for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, just to the audience, that's because my
the audience loves it. Besides the side that we do, the audience loves it. They all love it. They're loving me now.
I'm just saying, because my great grandfather, my father's father, was a steam engine driver. He was the engineer on the Mallard. He did several times and the
Mallard.
He did the London to Glasgow run.
Wow.
But anyway, bang to
242
to the U2
41 engine. Yeah. Anyhow, go ahead.
So Jimmy Bono, says
back Bono. I'm sorry to derail you. God, David, it's so great to have you on my show. I'm just so thankful that you finally came on. This show is almost 2 years old now, and you're one of my best friends, and I know you're incredibly busy, and I just humbly thank you for coming on tonight and sharing all this, because I've talked about you on many of my shows. I've talked about you in my audiences and my other, I even talked to you about you on Art Bell when I do that show, and it's just great to have you here, because the audience gets to hear you, and it's not me making up stuff that I said.
No,
you're actually telling
it. It couldn't be more real. It couldn't be
more
real.
Yeah, this is it, man. So go ahead with the Bono thing. This is a good story.
So then I drive home back from Hollywood, and now I've got traffic,
Not the band, traffic,
you know,
right?
It's Hollywood to Malibu is an ugly drive.
Oh, I know, it's horrible.
Going
up PCH?
It was still 2.5 hours. So I get home at 5:30.
Wow.
And I got a message on my machine. And I play the message, and it goes, "Hello, this is Greg from Jimmy Iovine's office. Jimmy wanted to know, can you call us back right away? He'd like you to start tonight at 7 o'clock.
Wow, that's cool.
It was like, what? I call back, and I said, yeah, I can be there. Basically, I just had to jump back in the car and drive back again.
For another 2 hours of traffic. Yeah.
So I get there for 7, and Jimmy says, "Okay, it's you and the track. Here's the track. Can you just mix this song and see what you can do with it?"
Yeah.
7 o'clock. He says the guys will be in about 10:30, 11 to check up on you. And it was like, oh my God, that was it, the instruction. So I mixed the song. And,
well, I know working with you in the studios, we always work late at night. We used to get out of there, and the sun's coming up.
Yeah,
many times in Hollywood,
And so, basically, I mixed the track, and at 11 o'clock, Bono and Edge came in to hear the thing, and they were
mixing it in L.A.?
Yeah, at A&M Studios.
At A&M, okay, cool. Yeah. Okay.
And they listened to the mix, and it was just sounded really like it should sound, basically, and really musical, and sounded like U2, and wasn't colored, wasn't like a polished American production on top of it. It was just sounding like U2 should sound.
Can I just interject here for everybody listening out there? Let me put a little sidebar. In the mixing, when you're mixing a record, you're sitting in front of this console. Sometimes there's anywhere between 24 and 250 knobs. Each one is an instrument. The voices, this and that. There's so many things that you have to do. You just don't push a couple. You're pushing many. And I've seen David do this many times. He's standing back. You don't say a word when this is happening, or he carries a derringer and he shoots people. David shot a lot of people for making them, and he tunes in.
I learned that from Phil Spector.
Yeah, and he tunes in. He tunes in to this big, huge board with 200 knobs on it, sliders, and he just starts doing his magic. He dances. He literally dances while he mixes the sound, and that dance. I don't know what you call it that he does. It's a dance. It really is. And you don't, I mean, they could put guards up outside when he's doing this. It's magic. And when the artist comes in and hears it, they love it. They love it. And that's why he's so successful. Go ahead.
Well, thank you.
That's true, David. You screamed at me. Don't move, Fred. I'm mixing, you know.
That's true.
Many times you've screamed at me, and I'm used to it. So I know the discipline. I know the drill. Just don't move when you're working your magic, and you deserve that respect.
And the reason for that is because what I'm actually doing in reality is I'm manipulating the way that the vibration of the molecules of the air are vibrating that give you different feelings. That's what will hit.
Yeah, you're so brilliant. You're so ahead of the time. I'm just blown away. Yeah.
So, you know, when you're dealing with something that's moving through air molecularly like that, and the vibration, any kind of movement of thought. You know, here's something for the audience which is quite astonishing, and I'm sure in different fields of life other people can pick up on this, but in the studio, a really odd thing happens is you sometimes feel incubated when you're with the band and you're in there for like 2-3 weeks and you're honing your baby here, you know, the art with the record. And you're thinking everything's really, really good and everyone's in agreement and all of that. And then a guy from the record company walks in.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, everything, without touching anything, everything sounds like shit.
Yeah, I know, because his vibe is so bad. I got it.
Yeah. I mean, they're confused. They don't know what's going on. And then you pick it up. I mean, it's like nothing sounds right.
Yeah.
It goes haywire. It just completely goes nuts. And it's like, it's taken me years and years and years to figure out what the heck was going on, because it was just, but it's a real phenomenon. How that happens, you know. So, and I think the technology. Well, I should get back to the Bonner thing. So
go back on. We just got sidebarred there a little bit, sidetracked, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
The audience loves it. They're used to this. They know I'm a space case.
They're going to be laughing.
Yeah. No, everything's cool.
Anyway, so. After that night, it went very well, and I got to meet the guys, and I didn't know what was going to happen after that, but basically I got
to meet them that night, or what?
Yeah. Bono and Edge came in, and Edge fixed a couple of guitar parts, or one guitar piece, and Bono fixed another guitar part that he'd missed, because it was a live recording of one of the songs. So he just fixed that, and then I finished off the mix and put it to bed. But then I got the phone call the next day to say, hey, you're in. The guys want you to come in and make the record.
Just off that quick mix.
That was basically, there was a little bit more to the story. I mean, basically what happened, I did about 3 weeks with them.
Yeah.
And they weren't ready to record the record yet. And they were still working on the movie, finishing off stuff on the movie. Now, I just finished a movie with Burt Berman at Universal with a director called Phil Giorano, and it was the 3 o'clock high movie.
Yeah.
And then you two are making their first movie, and I come in to work on the soundtrack, and who's the director? It's Phil Giorano. It's his second movie. So I already had a relationship with the director, and anyway, the first thing I discovered was every shot that he chose out of 43 shows they filmed and recorded to make the movie, they didn't have the audience recorded. on the shows that the, with the, going with the photos that he, the shots he wanted.
Right.
So for the first 3 weeks, what I did was I flew in all the audience stuff from other shows back into the shots that he wanted, so it would have a three-dimensional, you'd be in the audience when you watched the movie.
Yeah.
So after that, that took about 3 weeks, and then the band went back to Ireland for a month to do more filming. And Jimmy said, look, David, I've got this other record. I want you to produce this guy, Judson Spence, and see what you think.
Oh, yeah, because you brought him over to Europe when I was living in Europe.
Yeah.
You brought him over there.
That's right.
Remember?
Yeah, he's great. Really, really
cool.
Yeah,
he was wonderful.
And so I started
making David and I traveled around the world together. I forgot to bring that up. Yeah, go ahead.
So after I make his record, I'm about 5 weeks into it, just coming up to mixing.
Yeah.
And then I get this call from Jimmy from Ireland saying, David, you got to drop everything you're doing. I said, what are you talking about, Jimmy? He says, David, the band want you to make the record with them, and they won't come back unless you agree to make the record. You've got to drop Judson now.
Wow.
Said, you got me the record, Jimmy, and he says, listen, I'll sort it out. Don't worry about that, but you have to do this. You've got to do this favor. Well, that wasn't a favor. I mean, that was the way he put it.
But you wanted, I know.
It was like amazing. So I think the main thing was just sensibility-wise that a European band, they didn't want to become sounding too American. They wanted an American interpretation of music, but still sounding the European anchor of who they are.
Yeah.
And that's where my sonics came into play with making that work for everyone.
Oh, yeah, but your sonics, I've seen you do everything. I've seen you everything. You can do sonics from anywhere. Like an actor picks up an accent, you can do sonics from any form of music. I've seen you do it. Yeah.
Well, it's like, after you do things for a while, you become fluent.
Right, now, tell the audience about the time. So Bono shows up at now, David, just so the audience understands, he's moved from Nash Drive, his little place there, to this beautiful estate out in Calabasas near Malibu. Now he has a huge recording studio,
Malibu,
a separate
Canyon
building.
Yeah.
Now, before we haven't to talk about the Four Non Blondes yet. We haven't got to that. We got to fix that. But explain to them what happened when you had this. David had this huge, beautiful house separate from the studio with a swimming pool and the beautiful grounds in between. And Bono had a bit of an experience in one of in your system with the pyramids and the lasers and everything.
Yeah. Well,
and
when
blah,
we
blah,
were
blah,
making.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we were making the record, and it was getting towards the end of the record, and we'd all become pretty good friends. I mean, I've been working with them for 6-7 months.
Yeah, they're like your brothers.
Like every day, maybe a day.
I don't know, you're living together.
And
we're talking about 18-hour days and 6 hours sleep work, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was intense.
Yeah,
it
there's no fooling around here. There's no, and we're talking 7 days a week. Is that correct?
No, like about 5 months of that intensity, probably about 7 months in total.
Yeah, in 7 days a week,
yeah,
18 hours a day nonstop. And that's what
I
did.
Yeah, like a day off every 2 weeks.
Do it, you know. Huh?
Yeah, you have a day off about every 2 weeks. And
yeah, every 2 weeks. I remember you used to hire a chef to come up and cook our meals, because I'd be up there and we didn't have time to go for food. Just make it and bring it to us, remember?
That's right.
You always had chef.
Yeah. So you maximize your time there.
Yeah, exactly.
So towards the end of the project, Bono and Adam and Bono's wife, Ali, and Edge, they said, you know, we wanted to come up to the house and see where you live. Right? I was like, great, okay. It was a Sunday afternoon. So they called me in the afternoon and said, we're coming up. I said, great.
Yeah.
Edge said he wanted to go to a drive-in movie. He'd never been to a drive-in movie, so he was going to go with Jimmy to a drive-in movie.
Yeah.
Bono and Adam came up to the house, and they come in, and there's the pyramid and the crystal and the whole thing, which I have to give them a full explanation of course.
Yeah.
And that evening, after we'd finished dinner, I sat in the pyramid with Adam, and Bono wouldn't go in the pyramid. He was sat on the couch with his wife.
That's funny.
Observing everything.
Yeah, he's a little bashful.
Yeah, but he was still within the quad system.
Oh, yeah, I understand. We ambushed.
I said, I'll show you, you know, I'll play a record. And it was a pretty spacey record. It was Apollo by Brian Eno and Daniel Lanois. Well, they both
were
Daniel. So they know Danny's stuff. But I said, the difference with this when you hear it is I had the speaker with the mirror set up. So it draws the laser on the walls. And you know, that particular house, it had some big, large white wall area, which became like almost a projection screen for...
Yeah, it did.
How do we
that
describe
big
it
house.
To the audience? It's where
big,
the
wide
sound...
Open room.
Yeah, where it's a way where you can draw the sound on the wall with a laser, but directly being generated from the music. And every time you play the music back, it looks the same thing. So it's really interesting seeing the different... patterns, and it's just another extension of the art form. That's what I really see that as.
Well, you had your system set up with so many innovations that inspired me and to my clients. You always took my stuff, like some people do, and you especially, and did things with it I couldn't imagine. You had a better. I'm just a scientist, you know. I make the stuff. You actually showed me how it worked. You really did.
A bit of both there.
Yeah.
And anyway, ask me another question because I don't know where I'm going after this. I've been around.
Well, he got some. Bono got some creativity out of the whole experience, right?
Oh, absolutely. It was really, you know, it was great that they'd seen it, and they, you know, we had a really good working experience, and they definitely think I'm a little eccentric, but they think that, you know, eccentric.
Well, I think you just saw him recently in Hawaii, didn't you?
Yeah, and it was amazing. It was so good.
David was just with Bono a few weeks, about a month ago, actually.
Yeah, December 11th or something. It was an amazing show in the Aloha Stadium over here in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And, I got to see Adam and Edge and Bono, and... But they're looking so good and so healthy.
He looks great. He's on TV all every day almost.
Yeah.
No,
they're
anyway.
Really.
With his little orange
really
sunglasses.
So after that, a couple of
Let's
years.
Let's go to the Fernand Blondes, David.
Yeah. Well, years later.
You come back on the show. We haven't even hit 10% of what we've done together. We didn't even get to talk about Area 51, the stuff we've done. Let's just go to the Fernand Blondes. Can we talk about that, the Interscope, for a minute? Remember
I got to work with this band, the Fernand Blondes, which is Linda Perry specifically, who's the lead singer, and wrote a wonderful song called "What's Up," which we had number one hit all over the world. It was huge. And bringing in the work and working with people, I always had my pyramid set up, and also in the studio, I had a Firestar.
Yeah, three of them, one in the studio, two in the house.
Yeah, the Firestar at the back of the studio. And we're working on this record, and Dr. Fred came down to visit one particular evening. And the whole thing is coming together, and you can feel like the music all of a sudden start to lock together with the faders are all in the right position, and everything's starting to gel. And it's a lovely warm evening, and Dr. Fred's just outside the room, and you see something in the sky, and you say, David, quick. And I come running out of the room because there's patio doors into the studio.
Yeah.
And I come out, and flying over the ridge is this, again, ball of light. It was, I couldn't say that it was, I couldn't see anything metallic in it,
but saw it when it was leaving, and it was this beautiful flying saucer. And if you remember correctly, you were working with a guitar player from the Fernand Blondes at that time, who was having some problems with their riffs and stuff, and the other four of the four of them were outside, and they saw this beautiful disc, and you didn't want it because you're having that problem to interrupt you, but we got you anyway, and you got to see it as it was leaving.
And that's why it looked like a light to me. But
yeah,
was,
the other three girls saw it as a perfect disc.
Yeah.
That was fun.
And, I've had a lot of records that have had the presence before and during, and in different ways does the presence come in. Sometimes it comes in the way where you actually have a visual sighting of something. and it's physically there. Other times, like I'm now making Anne's record.
Yeah, explain. Now, let me explain to you. Anne is Dr. Anne West, who had a show on BBS Radio previously, who has a very successful, I don't know how many years she's been doing, a Hawaiian show over there.
Yeah, 10 years.
10 years. Everybody in Hawaii knows Dr. Anne West, his wife, who's a Glasgow Scot like me, a very beautiful girl, and a great talent with music. And Jesus, she's great. You know, and she's producing her first album, and you're doing it for her. And
yeah,
everybody on BBS Radio is going to want to hear this, by the way, all over the world. We got. I hope you let us play a song or two on here before you know, if we're allowed to, once it's finished. We'd love to hear what she's done.
Yeah, well, as soon as we got something done, we'll come back on, and you can give us, like, you know, 10, 15.
Yeah, no, we'll play it. We'll put it on, But explain to her how that's going. You know, that project's amazing.
Well, as I said, you know, it's like it always appears in different ways. So this record is, you know, one of the things with Anne, with the relationship, is at the beginning of it, she didn't want to make a record. So that made me feel really safe.
Yeah.
As a producer, that I was in love with someone who was just in love for being in love, as opposed to any angle on it. That has since changed, however.
Yeah. Now where are we at with this?
Well, what happened, when I recognized that happened, and that was happened for Anne, is A, she's very creative to start with, and B, being around creative energy, of which I am all the time, doing that. If I'm not doing it, being creative, I might not be happy.
Yeah.
So she sees when I, you know,
you and
I'm
me
creating.
Both.
And yeah, and it's inspired her to basically all blossom, and she's done really well. And the funny thing is that every time she's done something, and she's been learning, and I said, well, okay, that's good, but you can do this or do this and get better here and there. As she has developed and grown, she has been the best student I've ever worked with. It's because she's so talented and also the best artist, in the sense of it's amazing that when we're in the studio, I've never worked with anyone that's been more into wanting to make it into the best it possibly can be.
Yeah.
Without any attitude, and just what do I do? What do I have to do? And, you know, just tell me, and I'll practice, and I'll do whatever. So that's the way the thing got set up, and I felt confident coming into this. And we started the actual recording 2 weeks ago, and had a friend of mine, Mike Rowe from London, come over. He's actually Sheryl Crow's keyboard player.
All right, because I know you've done a lot of stuff with Sheryl Crow. My audience loves Sheryl Crow.
And Mike used to be in England. He was also the keyboard player for 8 years with Oasis, the British band.
Oh, cool.
So he's fabulous. He plays keyboard, guitar, and bass. Anyway, he came out here, and again, because of the energy, the way that it's set up here, and with the crystals, and the pyramid energy, it makes you feel very relaxed and very channeled and focused. And we've been able to, basically we did 2 weeks to start the record off with Mike. And the record internally already has this magic, this other thing that has come in to the room and into the music and into the recording. And I can't even describe how it happens, but it has the presence, and not every recording has it. You can use the best mic.
Oh, I know. I know what you're saying, yeah.
And it still can not be totally exciting. This has the bare minimum and is just so full of this other energy and vibration. And I believe all of that can be captured with really great microphones and with really great recording technology.
Yeah, and by the way, just let me interrupt real quick.
Yeah.
David Pickle knows microphones. I mean, he knows microphones. You look on the catalog and all the, why the hell is he kind of microphones? Big business, $5,000-$6,000 microphones. He knows each microphone for each singer. And if the singer doesn't have the right microphone, they don't sing. And other companies producing singers, I've seen it happen, come to David and say, what microphone do we use? How do we make the singer work? because we can't work it. And isn't that true or not?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I just had to.
You have the ear. You have this magical ear. You know.
Well, I every piece of gear. If you have that ear, you can learn what the piece of gear does. And to relate that to the audience, where everyone can actually relate to it.
Yeah.
The way that I was trained in the very, very first place was really by my grandfather.
Wow.
And what he did was, back in the days of 12-inch records, he used to buy records of two different kinds of records that he used to train me on. One of them was just bird sounds, like an ornithology record.
Yeah,
and it would just have the 30 seconds of a robin, and then 30 seconds of a thrush, and 30 seconds of a blackbird. And they all have different songs and different sounds. So he used to put the record on, and he used to jump from track to track and say, okay, which bird is this one now? And see whether I knew.
Was your grandfather?
Yeah.
In England?
Yeah. And that's
Wow, you never told me this.
Yeah, this is when I was about 4 or 5. It was a game we used to play.
Wow, no wonder you're so brilliant. You're a phenomenon. I mean, the audience out there doesn't know. This is a blue-eyed, blonde little guy. David is a handsome person, very strong, and we haven't even got to talk about the boat. We haven't gotten to talk about some of the flamboyant things you've done. We got to have you on for another show because we've got a little bit of time left. We haven't talked about Area 51. I mean, there's so much enrichment that you're getting out there because you're so creative. You're a famous artist, and you made so many people famous and so many people, really well-known. And you're the guy behind the guy, And this is and you're sharing with me stuff I didn't even know. I didn't know your grandfather knew about birds because I raised parrots.
I was into ornithology, and then it was an extension to if you can recognize what the birds look like, but wonder if you can recognize their sound.
Yeah.
And then after I'd learned that record, he bought another one, which was just steam engines. Famous recordings of steam engines.
Wow, I love steam engines. Yeah.
So, yeah, back to the steam engine again. But it was a part of, I like steam engines, and you say, okay, which one is this one? I said, oh, yeah, that's the mallard. That's the green one, not the blue one. Because it sounds different. And it's amazing how my brain was kind of, I could recognize the difference.
4 years old.
Yeah. 4 or 5 years old is when that started to happen, when he started to do that.
Yeah.
And then when I was 7, then, because I didn't really understand music until I was about 7. I understood sound, but I couldn't understand music. I couldn't organize it in my head. It was bizarre. And then one day my father took me to see Fantasia, and I was about 7. And I found most of the movie relatively dull, to tell you the truth. But when it got to the end with the magician's apprentice.
Yeah.
Or the wizard's apprentice at the end. Da 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 with all the Tchaikovsky music. And the way that Walt Disney, how it was animated, all of a sudden I could see every single thing that was going on in the picture had a musical part going on. So it related to an action. And all of a sudden, every action was represented by the music. And all of a sudden, it was like this: the world opened up to me. I suddenly understood how to listen to music. It was visual. It was telling me a picture.
Well, we got on BBS Radio, we have so many people that play their music that are brand new artists that sound great. And we're going to run out of time, but I got to get you back and continue this. But could you just tell people about your movie stuff, your stuff on Discovery Channel, the things that you're producing? We could go another hour on the music. Just jump over to the video stuff that you're doing. By the way, it's davidtickle.com, davidtickle, TICKLE.com on the front page of the website. Just got 2 minutes left. Just explain a little bit about the movie stuff you're doing, which is going to be phenomenal.
Well, I have a fledgling film company, and you'll see some of the stuff on the website there.
Yeah.
And I've got some really great partners involved. who've got a lot of talent and worked on some major, major films. But we're really looking to make as a company, you've got to make product that sells is number one. But we have the first thing that is going to be coming out is one on the Great Pyramid of Giza, and it's a lot of the mathematics of the pyramid, and basically we ask a lot of questions where we can show certain facts of that definite scientific facts of the pyramid, but it leaves questions about why was this done this way. And we lead people through that story. So
And we'll post it up on BBS Radio. When it's ready, you know, channel, blah, 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 we're going to post it. We're down to the last 45 seconds. Anything you want to say in closing, David? I love you for coming on, and thank you.
I just want to, give my love out there to all the people for listening in, and thank you, and it's a joy to keep making music, and I know a lot of people out there have bought music that I've been involved with.
Definitely.
So in some way, it's great to touch you and touch your life in some way like that. And thank you for listening.
Oh, David, thank you. Thank you, David Tickle, for coming on my show. It's been Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Will you come back on again?
Yes, I will.
Okay, thank you.
I'll have to wind myself back, but I will.
Yeah, email me any questions you want forwarded to him or talk to him directly. I'm very honored to have him on my show. And, David, I love you. I love Ann. I love everything you're doing. You're an inspiration to my life, and we'll talk soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and good evening.
I love you.